We are here today with Judy Ackerman, who was president of A-Matic from 2004 to 2005. Thank you for agreeing.
2006.
Oh, I'm sorry, 2005 to
2004 to 2006.
To 2006, okay. Thank you for agreeing to sit with us.
Welcome.
Could you tell us a little bit about your professional background and how long you've been involved into your colleges?
Okay, I had originally majored in physics in college and switched to math my last year of college, and minored in physics and education. My first teaching was in a middle school in New York City, and then in a middle school in Massachusetts in West Boylston. And at that point, I knew I had to go back to graduate school because middle school teaching was not going to be my career. Mostly because you have to pay a lot of attention to the kids and what they're about at that point. You always have to pay attention to your students, but I decided working with that age group was probably not my passion. When I went back to grad school, I got both a Master's of Arts in Teaching Math, which was mostly math, and then a doctorate in math education. We moved to the Washington, D.C. area because the military was beckoning my husband. And so I started looking to see what opportunities existed in that area. And I worked as an adjunct for a semester at the University of Maryland. And again, it felt more like grad school. It didn't feel like I was ready to launch a career, so I applied to a few four-year schools in the area, as well as Montgomery College, which is a two-year school, and took the position at Montgomery College, told them I'd be there for 2 years, and I'm now in my 42nd year at Montgomery College. I had never planned a career at community colleges, but I have to say that after working there, that was where the passion was. I loved the variety of students and variety of ages, backgrounds. I still love the variety. Our student mix has changed over this time because the demographics of our area has changed. But the students are certainly the passion, and it's not because every student is coming ready to learn. It's just they're exciting. I was in the classroom for about 25 years. And then became the Dean of Science, Engineering, and Math at Montgomery. I had other types of positions along the way. I coordinated our Math Science Center. I ran the Honors Program. And every time a new opportunity came, I usually said yes. I could only think of one I said no to our president for. And I still think it was the right thing to have said no. I was enjoying being the dean. I started planning some new facilities for science, engineering, and math. And then I was asked to step in as provost for our campus. It was at the same time that I was going to be getting ready to become A-Matic president. Each of those is way more than a full-time job, and it was a very hard dilemma to decide what to do. I did both, which meant that during the term of a Matic president, it's a good thing I don't need a lot of sleep on that.
Well, you've talked a little bit about how the demographics of students have changed over your career, but how has the actual teaching of mathematics changed during your career?
Oh, lots of changes. I think some are philosophical. At our institution, I think the philosophy when I first came was students have the right to fail, which is really a pretty dreadful approach to education. We then got into assessment and placement. Let's see if we can try to find the appropriate place to start a student so they have a chance for success, which is a better way to go, although I think we all have concerns about the tools that are available for placement, particularly if you're dealing with a large institution, and at my campus we have 17,000 students, so with 3,000 taking assessment tests every year, that's pretty massive in terms of that. Our pedagogy has changed, and it's changed because of, well, now flipped classrooms. Technology has had a profound impact on what we do. For initially, some people wanted to use graphing calculators just because they were there without thinking about what does that mean in terms of what you teach. Why are you using it? When you change what you do with it to capitalize on it, that's a good reason. Just to put one in a student's hand maybe isn't. Project-based instruction, more applications, certainly interesting and challenging for our faculty as well, because it's requiring us to learn new skills.
What year did you join AMATIC, do you remember?
It was probably around 1980. I had two colleagues who were both chairs. One was chair of a different campus. We were a three-campus institution at the time. We were only two. Margaret Aldridge, who really promoted professional activities and being part of local and national professional organizations. And then my chair, Bill Sweeter, also pushed that. And he pushed it so much that in 1980, when AMATIC was holding its conference in the Washington area, actually Northern Virginia, he told me that I was going to be the evaluator for the 1980 conference of the sessions. And I had never been to an AMATIC meeting at that point. The meeting was much smaller, probably about 300 people at that point in time. Small hotel, not like the ones.
What does evaluator mean?
Now we have these paper forms that after each session you have. Well, I had to create a form. It was dittoed, passed out. I then had to tabulate the results and do a report for the conference on it. The process probably could still be better than the one we use now, where I think there ought to be an app for it where we just fill it out on our mobile device. It's still paper, but it's a uniform form that we've used for a long time, and the presenter now immediately gets a copy. We eventually sent presenters information about their sessions. So that was really my first conference that I had been to. I didn't get to go to too many sessions. But it certainly, jumping in head first, feet first, for it was pretty exciting. And then didn't get to go every year because the college couldn't send us every year, but started going with some regularity to conferences. And I think I've been to them all since Indianapolis.
Are you a member of any other organizations, professional organizations, other than AMATIC?
Oh, yes. As an undergraduate, they were pushing National Council of Teachers of Math, and I still maintain membership there and get to some of their conferences, which are massive compared to AMATIC. I also belong to the MAA and go to a number of their conferences, have been on some of their committees, and have done some work with both of those organizations as to there's some intersection between what we do with AMATIC and each of those groups. Association of Women in Mathematics, and when I was president, one of the things that we were able to do was to have them recognize the top scoring women in the AMATIC student math league in each region. And so that's something that I've been really pleased to see has continued even past the two presidents, myself and who was president there. I belong to an engineering group, ASEE. It's involved in engineering education because I also supervise engineering. And then, of course, there are other organizations that aren't necessarily math focused.
Right. Well, we certainly know you are a past president of AMATIC, but what other roles did you play leading up to that?
Okay, well, my first involvement really was at the local level in the Maryland Mathematics Association of two-year colleges, and I was president of that for quite a few years and two stints as president. As an affiliate president, you get to be a delegate, one of the state delegates, and so came to conferences, came to delegate assembly, and ultimately, based on meeting some people here at the conference, was encouraged to run for regional vice president, and by someone not in my state, from colleagues in New Jersey.
So that would have been the Northeast region, right?
Mid-Atlantic.
Oh, Mid-Atlantic, okay.
So I did run for vice president and then ran again, was elected for two terms. And then also, since I believe that leadership should be shared and that people should have other opportunities, rather than running a third time, I was convinced by the same New Jersey people that I ought to run for president-elect. So I did, and was elected. So had the six-year term president-elect, president and past president. But in addition, I was involved, very involved in the traveling workshops, and was in the first group of traveling workshop facilitators. I'm not quite sure how Larry Gilligan, who was the founder of traveling workshops, found me, but I got this call from Larry, who I really didn't know, who I got to know over time, saying they were putting together traveling workshops and didn't I want to be part of it. That actually was a wonderful experience. It was in the days where graphing calculators were pretty new. I remember doing a workshop at Holmes Community College in Mississippi, and they were so new that we had to open the boxes of the calculators and get the batteries and teach them how to do that, much less talk about how you might use it in the classroom.
I was noticing I was reading an old a newsletter from a while back, and I noticed you were giving a traveling workshop in graphing calculators across the curriculum.
That's right. We did that. I did.
Was that the sciences, or was it, do you remember?
Across the different math courses.
Oh,
so,
okay.
From our lower level classes, and most places usually started with them in either calculus or pre-calculus, but then the use has expanded to other places.
Right.
As other calculators came out, we did workshops with other calculators. It was first with the TI-83s and the 84s, and then some of the more sophisticated ones. I did one workshop with Larry Gilligan, which was really a lot of fun to do, a two-person workshop. Did one in North Dakota, where there were some skeptics about technology, and that was quite a few years into using technology. So that was a very satisfying thing. Once I became an administrator and was not using it in the classroom, I got to the point where I felt that there's more credibility if someone is using it on a day-to-day basis. Even though I still was very much involved with our math faculty, I did think that, how would I feel if I went to a workshop and someone wasn't in the classroom? So
right.
I did step away. And I was involved with Crossroads and the revision of the Crossroads and Teaching by Choice, which was an American Association of Community College project for teacher education. So lots of opportunities to represent AMATIC, be part of projects where you want broad input.
Well, you were just addressing the Crossroads and the revision of the Crossroads. That was obviously one of the key issues that were being addressed during your presidency. What were some of the others?
Well, certainly that was a major one, and deciding, you know, when is the right time to even revise something like that, and what does it mean to revise it? Do you throw out what you have, or do you append it? Do you look at only certain sections that have changed dramatically? So that was a rather protracted. The role of community colleges and teacher preparation was an issue that was emerging at that point. And we've had some other members who took some of the leadership roles, but I was part of a couple of conferences where we were trying to grapple with what is the role. We had some awards and funding for people with projects related to that, so I was pleased to give colleagues at my school an opportunity to step up and to get more involved. And certainly our involvement at that point in time has led to a very strong teacher prep program at my institution, as well as many other institutions. One of the things that also is happening, and I think it wasn't just during my term, is that when I first got involved with AMATIC, it was a very grassroots organization. Almost, you described it almost as a mom and pop. When there was a conference in Baltimore, which is in our neighborhood, I remember driving overhead projectors to the meeting because we didn't pay for AV stuff. We couldn't afford to do that. And some of my colleagues were moving these overhead projectors from room to room because we didn't have
enough to go around.
Enough to go around with it. So part of what went on late through the years, and certainly during my term, is weighing what type of staff you hire to do certain things and what are the things that volunteers do. And I think we're still involved in that discussion. There's been one executive director who hasn't been a member, who didn't stay that long. Amatica knows we need an executive director for certain kinds of functions. Our interim executive director is planning to retire. So that's part of the evolution of an organization where you have some professional staff running certain kinds of things, the board setting policy. And so that's an evolution that a lot of organizations have. And I see that one as an ongoing one as we do it. We've gotten more involved in grants. And there were a number of grant proposals that were submitted. And just working through how do you decide which proposals AMATIC should be submitting, which ones are not ones that we want to be involved with, because you learn from institutions, yes, you get money, but you also need people to do the work. And can you cover the things? Do you have a reporting structure in place? Because if you mess that up, you're not going to get additional grants. So working on grants, certainly part of it. The other thing, how you represent the organization, and so how you brand ourselves. The current logo was a logo that was developed while I was president, and how we unveiled it, and we then thought about how do you market some items that have the logo on it so that AMATIC is a recognizable entity. So that was something that, although it's not math related, is important if you're looking at an organization and you want it to be credible.
If we could go back to the crossroads for just a minute. You had mentioned that one of the decisions that had to be made was whether it was time to update or not. The original had come out in 1995.
Right.
And I know that there was a certain polling of the membership at that time, but really what did make y'all decide that was the right time?
I think we recognized that there were changes going on in how we were teaching math. We focused a lot more at that point in time, 10 years later, on student learning. I mean, it used to be just teaching. But learning becomes a big part of the issue that you want to address, and students weren't as much part of the original crossroads. So a student focus becomes critical in terms of how you frame what you're saying about that. I think part of the other decision making when we looked at other professional organizations, NCTM, for example, had their standards, and then they issued an update of it. They had taken certain positions over time. People looked to see how practical things were, and maybe you need to modify some of your approaches to things, and technology being the one that probably were their standards. So I think we looked around and said, if we want to be credible, we need to take another look and have an update out there.
What were the accomplishments during your presidency or during your membership in AMATIC?
Oh, well, we've had lots of them. Certainly, working with some of the other organizations that are out there, the American Statistical Association, the MAA, we had a joint project. Project Access started as a joint MAA-AMATIC project. Ultimately, AMATIC chose to run it on its own, which was probably the right decision. There were a lot of discussions, and sometimes when different organizations have to come together, they're not easy conversations because each organization rightly should be looking out for its own interests. And you work together when they're common interests. There were some concerns, and so ultimately AMATIC chose to, once we finished the grant that we had and the term with Access, said it's time for us to go on our own. And I think that was a good decision. I'm glad to see it institutionalized as part of AMATIC, because if we're not working with our brand new faculty, we're not going to be viable. And it's a real pleasure to see our former Access Fellows involved in the organization, becoming committee chairs, officers, presenting, coming up to us and saying, I was in cohort. It's a good feeling to see that. I'm very proud that as an organization we've done that. We're taking care of our own profession.
How do you think the two-year college mathematics professor is perceived in the mathematics teaching community by high school teachers?
Well, I think the question is broader. It's how is the two-year college perceived by the community and high school teachers, and in different communities it will depend. I think that with our national recognition, where the President of the United States is recognizing the role of community colleges in economic development and preparing workers, that helps, certainly. In my community, where everyone's child is above average and is going to Harvard, it takes some maturity on parents' part to recognize Harvard might not be a good fit for their child. In fact, the state university might not be a good fit, and that the community college that's local may be the best place for that child to develop and explore. So we have some high school teachers who know us because they teach at our community colleges, and so they know the good work we do. We have others. It's usually guidance counselors who have the bigger problem. The teachers are fine.
Well, let's ask the same question then about four-year universities. How do you think we're perceived by them?
Again, I think it depends on the relationships that we build with four-year universities. In the state of Maryland, where I'm from, we've had some collaborative groups, math groups that meet, that are combinations of two- and four-year universities. We've banded together whenever the state is going to mandate certain kinds of things related to math. For example, what is general ed math? Our state was going to mandate that it was college algebra. The two- and four-year faculty all agreed that that was not a good thing, and we were able to change it so that it was at or above the level of college algebra, which gave us a broader latitude of courses. So many of our four-year universities in our state have good working relationships with the two-year colleges in math. Other subjects, not always. I'm thinking about some of the work we've done in other disciplines, but in math, it's worked well in Maryland. Are there people who think that we don't do our job? Sure there are. But I think for the most part, I think many of the people who get to know us or see us active, and that's part of, I think, why many of us do attend other meetings like the MAA meetings.
How do you think we perceive ourselves?
That's a good question. I think sometimes we underestimate what we can accomplish and what our students can accomplish, and sometimes make excuses for not always having the highest standards. I think we have so many different kinds of students. We have students who are not college ready. We need to work with them. We have students who need gen ed, and some of us are really determined that we're going to give the students the best possible education for that. And then we have our STEM intensive students. I once had a part-time faculty member, when I was department chair, come up to me and say, well, you know, I don't have to do this in my class. After all, it's not Harvard. And the person was talking about Calculus I, and I remember looking at him and saying, I would hope that a student who succeeds in Calculus I at our college will be as well prepared as a student who takes a similar course at Harvard. So there are a few, but I think most of us have high expectations and we want to do our best.
To what extent is the voice of the two-year college mathematics professional, or maybe the more broader question, the two-year college heard at the national level?
I think in general it's heard at the national level because of some of the new emphasis being placed on mid-level jobs, and so it's giving us more visibility than we've had in a long time. With visibility comes people then looking at how are we succeeding and learning how to even measure what it is we do. If you just look at end product and don't look at where we started and where we've moved people, that's a problem. And so the whole issue of voluntary framework on data is an issue. You can't measure two-year colleges on the same basis as four-year schools, but you do need to measure what we do so that people understand what we do and see our progress as we set our benchmarks.
Has AMATIC had a role in changing the perception, changing how two-year colleges are perceived?
I think it's had some role because there are a number of opportunities for like-minded organizations to come together. Certainly, the American Association of Community Colleges, AACC, is going to be the spokesperson for two-year colleges. AMATIC has the ability to have, usually the president goes to these meetings and is on some of the councils. That was something I did enjoy doing. So that gives you a voice. AMATIC is out exhibiting at some of these conferences, which gives us a voice as well. We become a voice with some of the other organizations. I was appointed by NCTM when I was no longer president to be on a joint NCTM-MAA committee because the then president of NCTM recognized that two-year colleges needed to be there and there was no joint NCTM-AMATIC-MAA committee. So, you know, the subversive way of doing it, he had the power to appoint a two-year person.
What are the key issues facing AMATIC in 2013 and beyond, do you think? The issues and the challenges?
Well, I think one of the challenges is a challenge that all professional organizations have, and I think that is how do you make sure that some of the newer professionals recognize the value of a professional organization. They recognize the fact that there's professional development, that they're colleagues, they don't have to invent the wheel by themselves, that it's a really good group, and all organizations have seen declines in their membership. So I think making sure that they understand the value, they recognize why they might want to be membership. So that's going to be a challenge.
Some people would say that is a tougher sell for the millennials. Do you think that's true?
Yeah. I mean, I have kids who are millennials, and they're involved in all kinds of things. They're not typical. I'm not quite sure why they do it and others don't. You know, depending where people are, their salaries aren't so great,
right.
But our dues are also not terribly high
in
the scheme of things. Even with, I think there's a dues increase in the works, we kind of now have a more automatic process for raising it.
It's tied to inflation, isn't
it's
it?
It's tied to inflation, you know, using math, and
right.
There were years we haven't raised the dues. I think the proposal might be to raise it to about $85, which in the scheme of things is not huge.
No.
So finding what works, and we've tried things. We're doing some different types of online professional development webinars. We're changing, and hopefully that will reach out. What our new faculty have to recognize is that being part of a community is really what AMATIC is about. So that's a big challenge. Another piece is how do you meet the needs of membership? How do you provide format services that work? Technology is giving us all kinds of ways of changing, and we have to make sure we're paying attention to those. Math is going to continue to be a big issue, and what is college math? What is college math for everyone? What do they need to do for STEM intensive? And although I was at the developmental summit for the last couple of days, there is no one solution, and we're going to need to continue to work on how do we address the mathematical needs of those who are not at college level. What is the literacy needs that we have? So there's a lot of work still to be done.
Well, Judy, I certainly appreciate you sitting with us.
Well,
I enjoyed it.
Well, good. It's always interesting to reflect on some of these things.
All right. Thank you.